This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And we are going to jump right into this. This is a show I know, Hunter, you and I have been looking forward to for a while because, yeah, we have Jeff Reynolds on, you know, yeah. We have him on twice a month, and that's great, and we have fun. But we have a special guest joining us today. Love you, Jeff. joining us today, Shelley Bouffarage. She is a contributor at RestorationNews.com, and of course, we've got Jeff Reynolds, senior editor at Restoration News, Restoration-News.com, as always, bookmark it. So welcome to both of you, and it's great to see you both, and Shelley, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you have been doing some work. Of course, we talk about that as well. You were also, you have an AKA, you were also known as Honey Badger Mom out on X. And I've been following you for a long time. I mean, you're a citizen journalist. You've been out there in the wilds of PDX. In the wilds. Yes. So one of the stories we wanted to talk to you about was you had recently done a story, the whole WNBA, oy vey. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say.
Well, oy, what does the W mean? Come on.
What does the W mean, first of all? We don't know. Wibbly, wobbly, wibbim, whatever. But you were actually on the ground at a game when the Fire, right? No, the Fever was with the Fire. See, I don't even like that. The Fever, the Fire, the Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated. I don't know. So Sophie Cunningham and Caitlin Clark were in Portland, and you were on the ground there, and there were a couple of girls there that were wearing the Jennifer Say XXXY t-shirts. So we talked a little bit about your article, but talk to us about your side of things. What was it like to be there?
So there was actually probably about 40 women and girls at one point.
Yay.
Outside of the Moda Center. And going in, I'm familiar with the woman who was organizing in Seattle, Amy Souza. Uh-huh. So I kind of thought that she would bring it, and she really did. So I walked up and I could see this large group of women and some young girls, and they had different signs like, "We love you, Sophie." I think there were some, they were wearing the XXXY t-shirts, and it was a very diverse group of women. You could see that right off the bat. And they were standing there taking insults after insult after insult.
Man.
And so just walking up, and it wasn't the far left that we pictured, you know, showing up to oppose these people. You always have the trans cohort with the far left Antifa, and they were there, but they were kind of kept separate. Of course, the city was very concerned, and the team, for the safety and well-being of people attending, which I am 99% sure that did not mean the women and girls that showed up to support Sophie. Yeah. So they actually had Portland police on the ground, and they were keeping them separate from the people who probably would do some terrible things. But the people who were yelling at these women and girls were just average Portlanders and people who were attending the game, mostly women. Mostly white women.
Well,
white progressive ladies.
You'd think you'd think a diverse group of women in Portland would be embraced and, you know, welcomed with open arms by these white women.
Yeah, no, because they're not following the protocol. They're not following the standards. You cannot, you know, the whole trans women are women, and you cannot question it. And even with these little girls. I interviewed a gaggle of about 7 or 8 young girls. They were, I think, 5th and 6th grade who played sports, and they came from Eastern Oregon to this game.
Oh, wow.
To see Sophie. Yeah. Most of the young girls that I saw there had traveled from Central Washington, Eastern Oregon, the Willamette Valley. And they were very excited to be there, but the media that was on the ground was very dismissive of these young ladies and said they had no idea why they were there. And even the people that were making rude comments were not kind to these young girls either. So kind of shocking.
It's so disappointing to see, you know, our fellow women treat young girls like this, from the, you know, the tolerance and kindness crowd to be absolutely vile to these young girls.
Yeah. I say it's shocking. It's shocking always to see it, yeah. But yeah. I am not surprised that they would do this. And another thing that I thought was interesting was, I had of course bought a ticket to the game, mm-hmm. and it was supposedly sold out. I saw empty seats, but it was a very full stadium. And the people that I sat next to, I just had a single seat. These men had come to see Sophie and Caitlin Clark. And going inside, there were a ton of flags. Even though flags weren't allowed, they were all trans flags. Mm-hmm. And I saw employees that weren't waving a flag, but they had put, you know, it was about 7 inches. They pinned it to their clothing. Of the Portland team.
It makes me think of the game, the preceding game after that. I don't know, a week or so ago after that, where the two women, the mom and the daughter, were in there and told to take their to turn their shirts around or to cover them up. And then there's pride flag. I mean, we're not over this yet. Why are we not over this yet, Jeff?
Well, you know, and that's funny because Enes Kanter, who has declared for the WNBA draft along with...
She's lovely. She's lovely. Oh.
She's living her best life.
Absolutely.
discovering fabulous. Her own truth. Yes. But so Enes was at a recent game within the last week and sat courtside with a T-shirt with the definition of a woman printed on it. Mm-hmm. And one of the players came up to him and started talking to him.
Her.
Misgender.
Use the right pronouns.
I'm probably dead naming him at this point. But yes. So it's just turned into this absurd thing where, like, even the players have polarized themselves, and the whole polarization of, you know, we have to take sides on this where we can't have a discussion. It's astonishing to me that American society, and we've had fights like this throughout our history, but this seems a lot. There's no middle ground these days where we always used to be able to at least unite around the fact that we're Americans. We all share the same heritage. We have a common view of what liberty means, what the constitutional society really means for personal growth and prosperity. We don't even agree about that stuff anymore. And this is just a microcosm of that, where, like, we don't know what a woman is. And when somebody has the definition on her shirt sitting courtside, the other players are supposed to, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction. They go over and they confront this person.
Well, that's funny. And there's not a lot of thinking going on.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
There is a little bit of a background. My understanding is this player and Kanter Freedom had some interactions via social media back in 22-23, which led to some animosity and anger on her part. So seeing him there obviously triggered her. Since that occurred, he's actually requested from the WNBA and the team an explanation of why he was removed and what punishment the player will receive, because the player should not be confronting fans. Period.
That's
end
right.
of story.
Good. I'm glad he's doing that. I'm glad he's doing that.
Yeah. Let's remember the Malice at the Palace, right? The big brawl that happened between the Indiana Pacers and the Detroit Pistons.
Oh, yeah.
It was at 10, 12, 15 years ago, where it spilled into the stands, and that turned into a huge problem. Yeah. Well, you know, that's bad enough when it's players fighting against each other, but when it's and you've seen idiots run onto the court from the crowd, you know, so they always take that very seriously, but they're strangely quiet when a player confronts a fan sitting in the front row there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm glad they're taking it to the max with this and wanting and asking that Hunter what he is asking for that, because mm-hmm. this is ridiculous, and you have to make them live by their own rules, take it to its logical conclusion, and then also make fun of them, because this is absolutely insane. We're living in insane times. Let's go ahead and take a break. Again, we're with Jeff Reynolds. He's senior editor at Restoration News. Chelly Bufaracci, she's a contributor over there at Restoration News. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Miller's Barbecue and Catering and Color Tile of Salem.
All righty, we're continuing our conversation with Jeff Reynolds and a show note here, editor at large at restorationnews.com. So that's great. Congratulations on that, Jeff. That's great.
Thank you.
And then, of course, Chelly Bufaracci, she's a contributor. So one of the other headlines that we talked about with you, one of your articles, Chelly, was DSA aligned Portland employees conspire to keep police funding off of the ballot. Now, we talked about that. That was a very comprehensive article. It got a lot of traction out there on social media. It went pretty viral. I just think a lot of us were like, not necessarily surprised, but maybe at the depth of what is going on. So talk to us a little bit about that. Refresh us on what the article was about and then kind of how you worked your way through it to come up to write it.
Okay, I'm going to preface this. I hope that I call these groups by their correct names because there is a lot of people and names involved. But essentially, PPA, which is the Portland Police Association and their union, and I believe is it Safety for All? It's a Portland group. They proposed in Oregon, you know, we can, of course, try and get our own measures on the ballot as people. Yeah. So they wrote up a ballot or a measure that would untie funding for the police from the city council and tie it to the population. Tie the amount of police to the population that corresponds with other cities of the same size that are fully staffed. Even if we were to staff Portland police at their top number, it's still not considered fully staffed.
Yeah.
So to take the power away from the city council to cut the funding and to tie the amount of funding and the amount of officers to the population. That's my understanding of that. So they had a paid signature gatherers as well as volunteers. And as soon as this measure hit the ground, they were attacking it. So they sued the measure multiple times, the people, you know, the wording, several different ways they were attacking it. But one of the things they did was have people go on the ground and filming the signature gatherers and then making election complaints. So that they could disqualify the measure on that basis. So I do not believe that process is finished yet, but what came out from that were two names of the people that were filming and made a complaint. The first name, oh my goodness, I'm not going to remember her name. She is a DSA lobbyist, registered lobbyist, and a very prominent DSA activist. But the person who was with her was a woman by the name of Susan Motet. Immediately searched both of their names. And Susan Motet works for the city of Portland as the director of small elections campaign.
It's the small donors campaign.
Small
right?
donors campaign, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And that is significant to tie those two women together. Motet there's almost nothing about her on the internet, including her politics, but she was out with a DSA activist. She's also in charge of making the rules for the small donor elections programs and deciding who gets the money. And it's a limited amount of money. And so just the fact that she was involved in this with another DSA activist is a scandal and a city of Portland employee. So was she doing this on the behalf of DSA? Of course, she claims it was just her right as a private citizen to do that. But the fact that she's involved with elections and interfering with an election process was wild. And it also, there's so much to unpack there. It shows how deep there are people in administration within the city government, the bureaucrats, that could be tied to these very radical groups. who knows? So
yeah, it's Banana Republic stuff.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, it's the city employees going and harassing signature gatherers and then rigging the election or the tabulation of the signatures after the fact.
That in and of itself is wild. That was the hardest part to write, because most of us don't understand how they decide whether or not the signatures are good or not. But there's a particular process that they're supposed to use where they document what signatures they pull out. And so they have like this map of, it's an audit, it's a trail so that you can know what signatures got pulled out where, and they didn't do it.
No.
Yeah. So they do a statistical sampling, right?
Yeah.
Looking at every signature.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's more. Then it's from that from that first statistical sampling, and they did not mention they disqualified 5,000 signatures right off the bat or more. And they said they have to send it over to the county, and the county does another part of this where I believe it's another type of statistical sampling, and they're supposed to reorder is not the correct term, but they have to number things, and then they send it back to the city, and they made a typo, and the place where they made this typo and the number that they put in, it was like normally you do like signature 9 page 12. Mm-hmm. Right. They did signature 458. That number's not supposed to go above 10. And then page 458, which ended up disguising the amount of signatures that were thrown out initially. Right. So people were still not aware. Was it on purpose? Was it an accident?
Well, we're going to find out, because they're suing now, right?
Oh, yes. Good. I was just going to ask.
Yeah.
What is anybody going to do about that? Has it been taken up to the state level? I mean, the Oregon Secretary of State getting involved in any of this?
Oh, well, they asked him to get involved, and he came out and he made a strongly worded statement.
Oh, that's good.
He has the right to get involved in this.
Yeah.
And he has the power. He has the duty to get
involved. Does he have the will, though?
Yeah, right.
But he didn't do anything. And they were kind of waiting to see if he would do anything, and nothing. So they did file a lawsuit. The problem is, will it go through the courts in time to actually make this year's ballot?
I'm going to guess
clearly not.
Very doubtful. Yeah, no, very doubtful.
Yeah, they're going to run out the clock. And then this is from the Portland playbook that's been in place for 40 years. They're going to run out the clock, and then they're going to say, well, you know, this lawsuit is moot now, and they're going to throw it out.
I believe that's what will happen. I mean, like, literally at every single layer and place in the city, there are people who slow things down, lose things, make mistakes. Like, they are slow walking this, attacking it in every way possible, because they know that it's very popular with people.
Right. And if I may, you know, the whole point of this is to increase the funding for the police to make Portland's streets safer.
Yeah.
And that's completely counter to the DSA platform. They want to defund the police. They want to remove, they want to defund jails. They want to stop enforcement of crime prevention. And, you know, they say, well, the police are the ones making people violent, which is bull, you know. It's such a backwards way of looking at things from the Democratic Socialists, the Communist Party, the people that are really pushing this stuff philosophically are deliberately making Portland streets less safe and getting in the way, and also degrading our election system by destroying this ballot initiative.
Yeah, and it's happening all over the country, and they're not hiding it anymore. There's no mask. I mean, they're out there fully saying it. They want to get rid of let's get rid of the Senate. Yeah.
I'd like to mention that these Aaron Schmaltz, and I believe somebody as a representative for Safety for All, went to the city director and the lawyer, the city lawyer, and said, we need you to start this over. And the only thing they said was, no, they wouldn't do it. And I uncovered that the city's lawyer is on the board of the ACLU.
No conflict shocked. Of interest there.
Not at all.
You know, and you wonder why there's voter apathy, and a lot of Republicans have voter apathy when this kind of stuff goes on. You've got to kind of rise above that and fight it.
Well, the only way to really figure it out is, you know, you know those TV show murder mystery bulletin boards where you have yarn going in every
the
which direction.
String.
And then you
here,
can connect
here,
all the dots.
Here.
Yeah, that's it's really that bad. I mean, it's such a complex story. It took a while for me and Shelley to work through it and get it to a point where it's like, oh my God, they really did all this stuff. This is stuff you'd find with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela.
Yeah.
This is how he got 106% of the vote. It's bad.
Yeah.
You have to wonder if it's not just if things like this shenanigans, which is such a silly word, but if this isn't happening in other agencies across Oregon, or again, Oregon always being the petri dish on all this stuff.
Right. It's certainly happening in Portland. And,
yeah.
And we've seen it, you know, through the years with the conservative organizations that put forth ballot initiatives and
yep.
having their ballot titles rewritten by the Secretary of State or the Supreme Court or whoever mm-hmm. Decides they need to step in and you know, make it more challenging for the voter to understand what they're actually voting on. This happens all the time. We don't even challenge that anymore because we don't have the courts.
Yeah, it's just the expectation. All right, well, you guys, we're coming up on the break for the bottom of the hour news. We're going to come back and continue our conversation with Jeff and Shelley Stowe, or Shelley, excuse me. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Greenacres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this lovely Thursday. Again, we're here. We're having a great conversation with Jeff Reynolds, editor-at-large, and Shelley Bufarach. See, I always want to do, Shelley, I want to do the Bufarache because I'm an Italian girl, and that's not the right way to say it. You are a contributor with RestorationNews.com. I love your name. It's like, that's fun to say.
You're not the only one.
Honey Badger so. Mom is pretty good, too.
Honey Badger yeah. Mom is cool. And again, for those listening, I know, first of all, I want to get the genesis of that, but everything will be linked up in show notes, and I will have a link to Shelley's ex, because she's definitely someone you want to follow, as, of course, restoration-news.com. So, Honey Badger Mom, it seems perfect. It's very fitting for you. You're out there. You're tenacious. You don't give up. Honey Badger just don't care.
So, you want to know where that came from?
Yes.
So, it came from one of my very good friends said that I am far too bunny rabbit, just very soft and like yielding to people and a people pleaser. And she said, you need more honey badger in your life. And she showed me that silly video that they have of the honey badger.
Uh-huh.
Honey badger don't care.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, I love that. I hadn't changed my moniker yet. I changed it after I had gone out in 2019 with Andy No, and it was that first time he got beat up, and I had
posted
some...
Oh, so you were
some...
there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
I was there. So I posted some pictures that went really viral for the first time ever, and he goes, you might want to... You've got your real name out there. Do you really want that out there? I was like, oh, no, I better change it, not realizing that I was already listed on the Roast City Antifa website mm-hmm. and doxed fully. But I'm like, oh,
you're
okay,
public enemy
it.
Number, like, three.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't know at the time I was kind of unknown. So I just thought, no big deal. You know, I'll just change it. Nobody will ever know who I am. And then it stuck. So I'm kind of stuck with it. And yeah. I aspire to it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you've been out there in the water. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, and as much fun as Denise is having saying your name, it's not like, you know, Alice Jones, where there might be 300 of them just in Oregon.
Yeah.
There's one of me in the entire world because it was my married name, and there's only one family with that name in the whole world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's interesting. But you have been out there for quite a while, mm-hmm. out on the mean streets. And I mean, a lot of your videos have gone viral. You do a lot of streaming and you've met a lot of interesting people. Are you continuing to do that? Are you kind of like, kind of not wanting to do it, or where are you at on that?
Well, so no, I'm not going to, there's a lot of reasons for it, but number one is my safety. And mm-hmm. after getting beat up 3 times and robbed, it's not really worth it. So I have gone out selectively when I knew there would be actual direct actions, and I block up just like they do. It has to be a different outfit every time though.
Yeah.
So, and if I know that I'm looking for something up, in particular, gas mask or keffiyeh covering my face with a Carhartt black hoodie and black pants and gloves and cover my eyes, like cover my hands, feet, everything. So. That's the only way
to dressing like Antifa.
Yeah. I look so just like them.
You want to blend. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I blend right out.
Does it seem like it hasn't been as hyperactive this summer, that it's been a little quieter, or is it the same? Is that just, we're not seeing it as much?
No, it's much quieter.
Yeah. Okay.
Away from the building. And I believe, can't say for sure, that they've arrested so many of them for just really minor offenses, and they'll offer them pay $100 and stay 500 feet from the ICE facility, and we'll just let this go. Or you can take it to trial and see what happens. So I think by attrition, they've got a lot of people to sign off on that deal, and it hasn't been worth it for them to show up. And even then, a lot of that crowd was not really Antifa, just far left random people.
So when you say arrest, is this federal level arrest? Because I'm not mm-hmm. seeing it be the Portland police arresting anybody.
That's a whole other story. But yes, it's federal arrests. So I have actually heard from some of the protesters myself, because of course I'll speak to anybody who will talk to me, and they've said mm-hmm. it's really not worth it to be down there.
So it really never was about strongly held convictions or anything like that.
I mean, some of them.
Yeah.
For some of them, of course, but a lot of them, it's just a big party.
Yeah. Well, that's what a lot of the videos, I mean, and then when you got into the blow up costumes and the bubble wands, and I mean, good grief.
That's,
and then you had mainstream politicians bringing the Maxine, looking at you, Max, bringing them up on stage. Max. I mean,
it was so clever. It wasn't just silly. I mean, it was silly, but it was so clever, because they were disguising that frog, the original frog.
Yeah.
I remember saying, I don't think I can say it on the radio. Death threat. Very terrible death threat. Very graphic. Mm-hmm. In the frog costume. And then I think I saw the frog on stage with Maxine not long after that. And they're like, oh, so sweet. Like, these people. Not all of them are sweet, especially that one.
Well, some of the meanest and most violent are the ones that are going to be putting on that kind of a costume, mm-hmm. because you're not going to suspect it.
And I'm glad you made out that it was really smart, because all too often we try to dismiss these people as buffoons, as incompetent, as inept, as they don't know what they're doing. And it may be not the street animals necessarily, literal street animals in frog costumes, but the ones that are pulling the puppet strings certainly know what they're doing.
I would say even the people on the street,
if
they're part of any affinity group, which is what they call their little groups within Antifa, they're absolutely, they know what they're doing. They're being advised by the NLG. Go ahead. Mm. Sorry.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I want to point out that also the federal government is doing a lot behind the scenes to disrupt all of these, not just the, you know, like you said, the payoffs and the negotiations, hey, go over there instead of right in front of the ICE building, that kind of thing. There's a story out there. We were just talking about this, the State Department revealing Portland Antifa connections to Hamas and the IRGC and this computer collective based in Italy that is a node for all of the international terrorist organizations. So Antifa obviously is connected with them. I mean, that's just not even a question these days, right? But then, you know, you think back to, boy, you know, everybody online, conservatives online have been fond of saying, you know, we dismantled USAID, and then all of a sudden there aren't any protests going on. You know, I think there really is something to that. That
I think so.
You know, we've disrupted so much of their network and their funding and their ability to organize through both defunding them and you know, drying up their funding streams, and also disrupting their networks of organization. I do think that that most it goes to prove that most of this stuff is not organic. It's not grassroots. It's all being coordinated by you know, far left groups elsewhere with nefarious intentions.
Yeah, and now you see them, they're kind of gone a little mainstream because they're winning in primaries in some surprising states. So it's like the tactic is shift now, where these are the same, they have the same core beliefs, they're DSA candidates, and they're encouraging this. They did build this apparatus and these street thugs. I mean, are you surprised to see that they're starting now to win primaries? Because we're not necessarily, does that, are those two things separate? What do you think?
I think that's part of their tactic, is to go into mainstream politics, but they're not being as successful as you'd think. No, Zohran Mamdani is a big example of this. But you know, Francesca Hong lost the Democratic primary for governor in Wisconsin, and she's a proud DSA member. You know, El Sayed, the Democratic nominee for Senate in Michigan, barely won his primary when he was up in the polls by double digits, you know. So this I don't know if this is petering out, but I don't think most mainstream voters are buying what they're selling, especially after seeing what they produced on the streets.
I don't either, but I know the tactic is we'll try this time and we'll probably come up short, but we'll be back. And you start softening up the voting base for that.
What do you think,
Shelley?
I think that's part of it. They're very successful in Portland. I'm definitely going to be interested to see this next election and see what happens. But what they did in Portland made it so that they could get so many of them elected to city council. They changed the city charter to give the city council more power to expand it, to create districts. So it was a smaller amount of people for them to have to woo to get to vote for them, plus the ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
And those processes started years ago, but that is what, with the small donor election program and how those rules are decided, is how these people are getting elected. And they're not necessarily, some of them are very open about their beliefs, but there's a lot of them that run undercover. And I think they also take information that they're gathering from these primaries, and then they're folding them back into how we're going to run these candidates. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, that whole process that I just talked about is being exported to Bend, Oregon. So they're working. Yes, they're absolutely doing that in Bend. And they're looking at the county commissioners being potentially completely fully leftist with some very radical ties.
Let's see. I sit here and I go, the other aspect is you're taking low information voters. And this happened with me. And you send out the thugs in the streets to create the chaos. Then the DSA candidate comes in and says, vote for me. I will end this. Won't happen anymore. Because in 2020, I had family members said, I'm going to vote for Biden simply because that way the violence will end. And I said, no, it won't. You'll empower these people and give them more reason to be violent. But that's the way the votes fell, because guess what? We don't want the violence, and they're promising it's going to stop.
No. Right. And again, I just think they're all pieces of a very large puzzle that we, woe to us if we underestimate the machinery and the the passion behind it, because they don't sleep. They don't rest.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point there, Denise, and the one thing that I've seen time and time again is they are very good at retail politics. They are really good at social media. They're really good at being relatable and personable. And that's, I mean, why do you think Hassan Piker is so popular in Portland? You know, it's because he relates to them on issues they care about. You know, he's a loathsome human being. But when he talks to people about the fact that you can't afford a home after the age of 30, you know, that hits with people. So same thing with Zohran Mamdani. Zohran Mamdani is a communist and a terrorist sympathizer, but he people flock to him because he's got a nice smile and he's good on TikTok, you know?
Yeah.
We underestimate them at their peril, but I think their greatest strength is, I mean, certainly pockets like Portland, Seattle, Corvallis, Bend, those kinds of areas are going to be hotbeds for DSA candidates getting elected. But really, their biggest threat is holding the Democratic Party hostage and making the larger organization bend to their will, because they were crowing just a month or two ago that they finally surpassed 105,000 registered members of the DSA nationwide. So it's not a huge organization by any stretch,
but it doesn't need to be.
Right, because they terrorized the Democratic Party into submission to support all their policies, even if they don't overtly say that they're socialist.
Yeah, and we've seen this over and over, throughout history. Okay, we're running a little long here. Let's go ahead and take a break. Again, we're talking with Jeff and Shelley from RestorationNews.com-news.com. We're going to take a break and come on back after that. 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
All right, everybody, let's shift gears a little bit, because this was kind of a rough week, especially, for those of us who do follow entertainers and have beloved entertainers. And we lost two really good ones. I mean, lost Dolly Parton earlier in the week at 80. And then yesterday, and this one broke my heart too, Tim Curry at 80 years old, both of them at 80. Both of them, Dolly Parton, definitely. I mean, sort of the general consensus out there that she's the last universally beloved celebrity. I don't know anybody who had a bad thing to say about Dolly. I might put Tim Curry kind of in there a little bit, not as much. I'm a huge fan. I think the number he did when you see him come down in Rocky Horror Picture Show, I mean, oh my God. So I've always been a Tim Curry fan. I'm not a country music fan, but I still love Dolly. But it's like, I don't really see, Hunter and I were talking about this yesterday, trying to look out, is like, is there anybody coming up the ranks that could even come close to either one of them?
Well, not being a celebrity follower at all, I engaged AI to help me with this question. And so according to Grok. The name that keeps popping up pretty universally is Keanu Reeves, who is supposed to be the most humble and nice person in entertainment now.
And I don't know his politics.
Right. That's a really good point. Like even with Tom Hanks, exactly what his politics are. And I've been over Tom Hanks for decades.
A long time.
Yeah, I think he's very overrated. But I mean, he's supposed to be a nice guy and everything. So some other names that made the list, John Cena, apparently, he's supposed to be a decent dude, but he holds the documented record, the Guinness World Record for most Make-A-Wish Foundation wishes granted, 650 plus since 2002. So, that's something to hang your hat on. I don't know if that makes him the nicest person in the world, but it certainly is some, he's giving back to his fans. So,
which is that's cool. Something. And what I loved about Dolly Parton is that she did a lot of this. I mean, she was probably a multi, maybe even a billionaire, and just quietly did it behind the scenes for not a lot of recognition and did it. She really took care of her community. She took care of her imagination library in honor of her dad. I mean, there was so much. And again, between her and Curry, we did not know their politics, because I was thinking yesterday, maybe 20 years ago, maybe Julia Roberts right after Pretty Woman. But then as soon as she opens up her mouth, it's like, ugh, sit down, girl. Yeah. I don't want to hear from you.
I don't know. I think she's overrated, too. I don't think she's all that much of an actress. The other two names that I thought of were Ryan Reynolds. He's supposed to be really nice and has a good reputation in Hollywood. So he's not exactly like universally beloved, but he's got a likability factor. When he's on the screen, you like him, and his sense of humor comes through and connects with most of the audience. So that's a I don't know about likable, but it certainly connects with the audience. And the other guy that I thought of off the top of my head was Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, see, whether it's Keanu or John Cena or Ryan Reynolds, I think the challenge that they have in getting into that Tim Curry, Dolly Parton area is they have a very niche audience that truly loves them, and then a group that's kind of heard of them.
Because yeah, they're not as universal, right?
They're not movie stars.
They're all movie stars.
Everyone knows who Cary Grant was. Yeah. Everyone knew Katharine Hepburn, Audrey Hepburn. I mean, there's some now I'm blanking on all of them. But I mean, old school Hollywood, where, of course, you had the machine behind them, the old studio system, that you didn't know anything about them except what the studio wanted you to know. So I think the shift with the breaking up of the studio system, now I know way too much about these people that I really never wanted to know.
Well, there was always the rumors about Cary Grant, too, because he was sharing the apartment with the other actor whose name I've forgotten at this point.
Rock Hudson. And yeah.
Well,
ahead,
he was likable.
I love celebrity culture and the arts, and I never get to talk about it. So I think Hugh Jackman is probably one of those movie stars. And I remember reading an article several years ago that was saying there are no more American men movie stars that are very masculine. They're all Australian.
That's a great point. You're right.
They're all Australian.
Yeah. And they listed, I had like 10 actors, and I was like, I actually agree with this. But
who actually have hair on their chest?
Yes. Very like they do the manly things.
Yes.
But Hugh is multi-talented. He could be an EGOT winner. You know, he can sing, he can dance, he can act.
For those that don't know, EGOT, go ahead, explain that.
Oh, it's the people who won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. Yeah. So Broadway.
Yeah.
So movies, music.
All around. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is that talented. The only problem is his armor is a little bit tarnished because of him leaving his wife, supposedly with an affair for his Broadway co-star, whose name is now...
name?
No. Her name.
I'm like, wait, what?
Sorry.
He is into musicals.
Her name. Her name is escaping me.
Okay.
Yes. I actually, my ex-sister-in-law worked, had a friend who worked on Broadway and worked on The Music Man and said he was just a phenomenal human being. Everyone loved him. Friend, he treated everybody very well. So I do think we've got him. And I actually met Keanu Reeves a long time ago when I worked at a state park and he was filming Point Break there. Oh, and he was super shy. Super nice. You just like he's a really great guy, but I do think he's kind of niche. I love him.
There's not the universal star also universally likable, right? Well, like you got Tom Cruise, but he's got plenty of detractors.
I love Tom Cruise.
Well, and
he is a movie star. Tom Cruise is a bona fide movie star.
Class right. A. Movie
well,
star.
And I brought up the Dolly Parton, the musical females in particular, Taylor Swift, Mariah Carey, all of them have so much baggage. They're known in every household, but there's so much baggage with them.
Hunter, we got a couple seconds left. That's it. We're out of time. Jeff, Chelly, great to talk to you. Restoration-news.com. We will have, obviously, Jeff will have you back. Chelly, we'll have you back as soon as we can. That's it for us, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.